ojos colorados. Bro, te paso a buscar. Loco, estoy tranquilizado. Voy chill out por la ciudad. Paso a por un kebab. El Apolo está petao. Esto va a descarrilar. Ey. Ey. Voy chill out por la ciudad con los ojos colorados. Bro, te paso a buscar. Loco, estoy tranquilizado. Voy chill out por la ciudad. Paso a por un kebab. El Apolo está petao. Esto va a descarrilar. Ey. Voy chill out por la ciudad. Por la ciudad.
Clearly, it was a bad thing, but I think if it's possible to channel that, and you see people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez really always talking about mass movements and about the involvement of people, I think this can be something quite interesting and quite positive. I don't think this is per se negative.
Okay, yeah, because my last question would be, was this the final triumph of tactical media after about 25 years or something, yeah, but in rather a different and a negative way than we envisaged it 25 years ago? Because that's how I see it. This was tactical media all over the place, but yes, but not exactly in the way that we want it to be, no?
I think structurally it was in the way we wanted it to be. People doing their own media, their own, decentralized reporting. Obviously, the aim of what they were doing was totally against the ideas that animated the tactical media movement when it emerges. This is clear. It wasn't, but in terms of, if you take tactical media at the first kind of instance, and then you take something like indie media as the next instance, then it really is you become the media, and producing the media is a political act in and of itself. Yeah. I always found what I found really funny not funny, but kind of odd yesterday was that I think at one point, at one door, someone scribbled "murder the media." And it was clearly that for them, the media was the mass media, and they were attacked and their equipment was smashed.
Mm-hmm.
And they themselves were not the media, which I found, stupid and naive, but that's kind of the promise, right? Of also, Trump always says, thanks to Twitter, I can speak to people directly.
Yeah, yeah.
Was,
Okay, well, I think that this will give us a lot of food for thought the next couple of weeks and months. So
yes,
we will probably come back to you one day or another. But for the moment, thank you very much. And we're going to talk to Brian Holmes now.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, ciao.
Okay, thanks. Ciao. Bye-bye.
Bye. Je maintiendrai. Met activisme, kunst en actualiteit. Felix, hoe heet Felix ook weer van zijn achternaam?
Stalder.
Felix Stalder. Hij was uit Wenen, ja. Hij was ook toen in onze Amerikaanse verkiezingsuitzending. Ja, dat was ook gezellig. Maar dat weet je nog heel goed. Dat was 3 november, was 2 november. Wat was het eigenlijk? Dit was de avond zelf. Jij was zat hier te wachten. Oh, dat was ook zo. We waren midden in de nacht opgestaan om een radioprogramma te maken. Want we waren gek geworden. Dat was toen nog. Maar nu niet meer. Nu zijn we serieus.
Alleen ben ik Brian zijn nummer kwijt.
Oh, wacht. Dat heb ik misschien nog wel ergens. Ja. Even terugzoeken, hè, natuurlijk. Oh, je hebt hem al hier. Oké. Okay. Ja. Anders heb ik hem ook. Ja, ik had hem. Je hebt hem al. Nou, bellen.
Ja, we gaan hem bellen.
Ja.
Hi, Brian. This is Menno talking to you from the studio of Patapoo Serieus in Amsterdam. I'm sitting here with Bart, who was your host last week. Thank you for being with us tonight again. And the reason, of course, is obvious, because yesterday was a big moment in history, and certainly in media history, as far as I'm concerned. So I was very we are very curious to your view on all of this. So please give us some food for thought.
Okay. I mean, everybody has food for thought after these events, you know?
Yes.
And of course, these are yet more events, you know, in what has really been a kind of ceaseless onslaught of events in this country. That does have a lot to do with social media, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that. The intensity, the continual change in the character of events, that aspect of it is now becoming familiar, along with the adrenaline, the sense of, you know, impotent rage, hope, all these things that are going on here.
Yeah, hi, are you still there?
Yeah, totally.
Okay. So I thought that... Oh, wait a moment. I need to talk in the microphone, Bart says. So I thought that the analysis that Felix put up on NetTime was kind of spot on, because if you listen to the interview we did just now with him, I said this may be... something like the final triumph of tactical media, but slightly in a different kind of fashion than we imagined it 25 years ago. I don't know if you agree to that, but this is what I immediately thought. And I'm not so sure whether I am all too happy about that. So what is your take on things?
Well, the Trump administration and the rise of the far right in the United States, with the transformation of the media scape that we know here and around the world, I think has brought a lot of lessons for those of us who are veterans of tactical media and of the initial popular appropriation of network media. Things have changed and other things have remained the same, but expanded and showed what they are really made of in a way. What happened here yesterday is in so many respects entirely different than anything we ever experienced under the banner of tactical media and in the years of the late 90s and the early 2000s. Certainly because you have a major political figure, by some accounts the most powerful individual in the world, who is not only using their Twitter account, but using the office of the presidency and all the charisma, all the power, all the reach that implies, is using all that to actually engage in tactical media, to engage in you know, one to many, one and also one to one, you know, multiple sort of like the network communications that form a ball. You know, they roll into a weave, of course, in which every point has agency. But in this case, you have one point which has massive, massive agency, and we never saw this before. So now we're in the era where a kind of antagonistic and even insurrectionary politics with a capital P, you know, at the level of statecraft, is being carried out using something like tactical media. And so I would say that, yes, there's similarities there, but there are big, 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 big differences.
Yeah, okay, I agree. But in a way, then it is almost, how do you call that in English, a reversal or something that is upside down. Because this is basically then the most powerful person on earth, as you said, using tactical media to gain at least some of his goals. And I think that is, apart from anything else, that's amazingly interesting.
Of course, it's extremely interesting, but I would also say it calls upon all of us to reevaluate who we are, what we do, and also which world we live in.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Felix obviously has a lot of interesting ideas, and his text on that time was quite interesting, but I think it's rather short. It's, in fact,
of course.
Sorry, Felix. It's wrong to apply a media theoretic analysis to what happened, because much more is going on than that. Much more. I mean, really, tactical media has to be subsumed under the way that computerized network media grew up under neoliberalism. And what happened during this process is an attempt to leave politics behind. I mean, that was on both the left and right a stated attempt in the 1990s, and split off into a sphere where social relations are actually not even the sum, but simply the texture of individual relations multiplied infinitely and changing at all times, okay? This is the capitalist world. This is the capitalist version of what media is for. Basically, what happened yesterday was, if you want to look at it in terms of media and their effects in the world, you really have to see a kind of a three-way struggle, I would say, between network media and what we're calling a sort of politicized version of tactical media, tactical media as statecraft, versus two other powers. One, established media, both print and televisual, mm-hmm. And then the second power, which is, of course, the Congress of the United States, the actual House of Representatives and Senate, which have their, you know, their own media, and also, like the established media, also have institutional foundations that are a lot older than the past 40 years of neoliberalism. And so the conflict that unfolded yesterday was extremely interesting, because it brought to a head the disruptive powers of networked media and in such a way that really demands action, demanded action and received action, you know, received an extremely strong response from society. And so I think that is the essence of what happened yesterday, is that response from society towards the attempt at what was the attempt is the question, the attempt to seize the affordances of the neoliberal media sphere and turn that into the reality that actually governs a country like the United States. Now, that's impressive. An impressive conflict, a very impressive conflict. And it has to do, as I was thinking about it last night, the phrase that came to mind was from Marcel Mauss, the anthropologist, and I thought about this phrase, a total social fact. So yesterday was a total social fact. Mm-hmm. That means it's not just a media thing. It involves every aspect of society, of embodied social relations between people who, of course, also have writing, have media, have many, many elements of civilization that they build upon all the time. This total social fact took the form of a ritual. We had what is called in English a ministerial ritual. That means there's no politics involved in this. It was a matter of reading, the count of and doing so in an extremely formulaic way. This ritual, however, became what Mauss calls a total social fact because it's a lived ritual which is dynamic and precarious. And certainly never has a high ritual of the democratic state been so precarious as yesterday. So that was extremely interesting.
Yeah.
And I think you can put the finger on why it was precarious. The reason it became so dynamic, the reason that it really brought to a head this whole question of how are we governed? How do we govern ourselves? Is that the Republicans had been engaging for years in a form of political theater that they were pushing to the limit yesterday. And this form of political theater takes as its starting point the idea that popular passions can be staged by politicians in a duplicitous, false way that claims to achieve one thing but actually serves the vote-getting agenda of politicians who will go on to do another thing. And the Republicans, the Trump administration has shown this notion of that this practice of a kind of insurrectional theater has been extremely good for achieving core Republican goals, which are goals that Trump entirely embraced. And to do that, to achieve those goals, basically what has been called upon is really the historical memory of the Civil War, the form of insurrection that takes apart the state. And so they did that under the belief, which was confirmed by each one of their, theatrical ploys, that this would not have consequences, that this would not lead to violence, that this would not lead to an uncontrollable kind of violence. Well, what happened yesterday was not an uncontrollable kind of violence, but it's a form of violence that is in the process of being roundly rejected by a big majority in the United States. Mm. So this attempt to continue using this insurrectionary theater, I think, met its limits yesterday, and I think that's an extremely positive development. It does something like lancing the boil of Trumpism.
Okay.
It both exposes what it is and also what it takes to overcome it.
Okay.
What it takes to overcome it, this was an amazing thing yesterday because we woke up to get the confirmation of what, was kind of obvious upon going to bed, if you went to bed late, namely that the two Democratic candidates in Georgia won their posts. So
yes.
This is a turning point, This is a turning point in the power of the Democratic Party to govern. And as we've seen, the Democratic Party does, in fact, govern very differently than the Republican Party. Now, at this turning point, this ship called America right now is sinking. Mm. We live in a country that is not only at the height of a devastating pandemic and, affected much worse than any other country in the world per capita. There's just no comparison, really, with the disaster of COVID in the United States. It can't really be compared to anywhere else because it's been managed so badly. In addition to that, you know, you can add many other things, including the hacking, including the, you know, economic crisis, including the breakdown of, you know, international relations for the United States, and finally the and most importantly, the degree of domestic turmoil and the, you know, divide between citizens, that there really is close to a kind of, well, it's certainly, it's been brought to the imaginary threshold of civil war, I would say. These things are serious. I mean, if there was not so much goodwill in the world, the United States could have been attacked yesterday.
Yeah.
Because the weakness of the country is, you know, it's an incredibly weak point for such a powerful country. So when this Democratic majority was gained in the Senate yesterday, what that means is that the incoming administration has an all-hands-on-deck job to save the sinking ship of the United States right now.
Yeah.
And what occurred, you know, in the Capitol was the last effort to prevent them starting that work. That's really extremely interesting. It's also extremely interesting that this occurred in the context of what is manifestly a ritual.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with media politics, man. A ritual is an ancient thing. You know, an archetypal thing. You know?
So all in all, your conclusion, I'm tempted to say, is rather positive. So yes.
Of course, I was dreaming of this event. I hoped that this event would happen. I could foresee it. You know, it was clear that there would be some kind of insurrectionary attempt, and after the elections, it was also clear that this insurrectionary attempt would be weak, uncoordinated, unpopular, and that it would fail. The thing that seemed to me most important is that it happened. Because only if it happened could it be rejected.
Of course,
it goes on simmering, you can make theater about it forever. You can draw upon it. But if it comes into the light of the day as a weak, disorganized, and failed insurrection whose failure has everything to do with the way it was organized, because it was organized, then, you know, we have a chance, only a chance.
Okay. Then the next question, of course, is what do we need to do then?
Honestly, I think that this, it's clear that this is a dangerous moment in time. I mean, this is an extremely dangerous moment in time. I have to recall, because it also has to do with my own personal experience, you know, the fires that happened in California and throughout the West Coast this summer. That's part of the breakdown I was talking about
yeah.
the sinking ship. You know?
Yeah.
This dangerous time requires a societal response. That means that everyone has to take up some kind of activity that feeds into a process that's larger than themselves. Or if they don't, then they have to suffer the consequences. So we do not have a tremendous amount of time. You know, we have probably a couple of decades, but not a tremendous amount of time to take up this activity. Now, how to do that? I think that the direction that I've set for myself is to find a form of constructive engagement with what's going on in society. Of course, as a critical intellectual, of course, as also a networked media maker. But I think this has to be done in a way that, you know, cannot depend on the thing that I always found very, very short in the tactical media years, you know, the notion of disruption. Okay, I actually didn't participate, and I've also been an insurrectionist. I've, you know, walked through you know, tons of tear gas, thrown stones, bricks, and you know, organized with people to break into government buildings.
Sure.
But the point of doing these things was to push into the public light and pursue a politics. The politics which has to do with institutional change. Because you don't, I mean, it's a fantasy, but to believe that individual change changes the world. It does. It precisely doesn't. And it's also a fantasy to believe that self-coordinated social movements change the world without some kind of institutional foundation. Mm-hmm. They don't. They change the world when they're able to link up but not become the sole property of formal political movements, you know? And they have to link up because you have to have in democracy, you have to have the assent of at least an activated portion of the citizenry to get anywhere. So they have to link up because otherwise power remains what it is. And this is what we typically say in the world. They have to link up but not be the same, because if they're the same, then they become their critical capacity disappears, and therefore your capacity to steer at a dangerous moment disappears. You blind yourself. So there's a complex relation between civil society and not the state, but those people who jockey for controlling the state, for guiding, you know, directing the state. That complex relationship is the thing to engage with now, I think.
Yeah.
And if your political parties and leaders are not good enough, then you have to make them better. Because basically, yeah, we're headed towards a mortal encounter with a lot of the consequences of 20th century capitalism.
Yeah. So if we stick to your metaphor of the sinking ship, then mm-hmm. the basic message is all hands on deck. And don't be too critical. Of course, you should be still be critical, but at least you should help to keep the ship afloat as well.
Well, you know, I mean, basically what just happened was a fight on the deck, right? I mean,
yes.
You know, that's what just happened yesterday, you know. There have been, you know, bloodier fights in recent history for sure. And what I found really interesting about yesterday was not the blood. And by the way, I was less interested in the story of the cops. Yes, the cops, there'll be a need for a lot of investigation on why the Capitol Police. You got to realize there are two polices. There's the Capitol Police and then there's the Washington Metropolitan Police.
Yes.
The Capitol Police have jurisdiction, you know, just on the federal complex.
Mm-hmm.
The Capitol, there'll be a need for a lot of inquiry into why the Capitol Police apparently failed so spectacularly. I mean, I'm personally glad that all this happened, so whatever. I'm interested in the inquiry, too. But let's imagine if the Capitol Police had barred the doors and started shooting at the protesters and kept them all out successfully, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Let's imagine what would have happened the next day.
Yeah.
This would not have been a good outcome.
No.
Politically, this would have been deadly. So, the Capitol Police, whether this was intended or not, they did okay, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They shot a woman. I think that wasn't so great, you know? But the discussion is not really there. The discussion is more about, it's not about the blood. It's not about the Proud Boys. It's not about the capacity of the three percenters to have an insurrection in the West Coast, which, of course, they tried to do and failed miserably also yesterday with some isolated events like going to the house of the governor's mansion of Washington State and so on. That all those things did not happen.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was that the perturbation of this ritual made the ritual real. It made the ritual consequential. It showed that political theater is consequential, has consequences. That, I think, is really interesting because I think it gives everyone a much more just real, tangible, meaningful set of circumstances to grapple with. In the same way that perhaps, well, a different way, but similarly to the way that the George Floyd protests gave very, very real things to grapple with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you very much for this very clear analysis. I don't have any questions anymore, and I don't have anything to add to it. Maybe Bart has. No, he is vehemently shaking his head, so and waving his hands in the air. So I think the message is no. I don't want to. Okay. So
going further with this.
Yeah. So thank you, Brian, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Certainly. Have a good one.
Okay.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. Ja. Hoe serieus je met je trainer luistert u naar? 88.3 FM stereo. En hij staat nog aan. Brian praat nog gewoon. De komst is nog aan het bijkomen. Hoeveel mensen gaan we nog bellen? Want we hebben ook nog Brian in Portland in ieder geval. Niemand meer.
Nou ja, wel. Nee, we moeten even met Jo en G bellen nu.
G wil niet. G kan niet. Ze melden die via de app van het net. Ik snap het niet.
Ik weet het al. Hij heeft een date.
Leuk. Hé, wat leuk zeg. Maar we gaan het niet verder vertellen natuurlijk. Oh ja, zullen we Jo en Kimball samen doen?
Ja, dat lijkt me ook gezellig. Maar...
Of eerst Brian en dan Jo en Kimball. Om het in een soort verwarring te eindigen.
Kunnen we G niet ook even stiekem bellen, toch?
Ja, hij zegt net, ik kan niet meedoen vanavond, jongens. Ja, hij weet dat wij jongens zijn.
Oké. Nou, goed, misschien moeten we dat respecteren. Dat is oké. All right.
Brian heeft wel iets toe te voegen hierover. En de baas van Patriot Prayer is opgepakt.
Van?
Patriot Prayer, zo'n lokale soort Proud Boys-achtig mafketen.
Ze pakken nu iedereen op volgens mij, want dat is eigenlijk wat Felix al zei. Hè? Ik geloof niet dat ik het daar helemaal mee eens ben, maar het is in principe mogelijk om een goed deel van de mensen die gisteren aanwezig waren... Ja,
volgens mij zat hij er los van wat gisteren is gebeurd.
Ik denk het niet, ik denk dat het ermee te maken heeft.
Oh, misschien zat hij ergens anders wat te doen. Ja. Maar dat moeten we dan even aan Brian vragen. Maar ben je ook voor dat we eerst Engels doen en dan Nederlands?
Mij maakt het niet uit wat je wil.
Want even kijken, hoe laat is het? Ja, want dat klopt wel met de tijd ongeveer.
Ja?
Dan komen we ook mooi rond uit, denk ik.
Brian bellen?
Ja.
Nou, vooruit.
Jee.
There we go.
Ja.
En mag jij...
Neem de honneurs waar.
Well, hello.
Well, hello, Brian. You're live on air. So, from Portland, Oregon, on the West Coast, here's Brian again, like almost every week. There's some important news from Portland. This guy from Patriot Prayer was arrested. Why is he arrested?
So Chandler Pappas, I guess, has been accused or suspected of assaulting police officers in Salem at the New Year's protest. There's there's some photo and video evidence. You know, it's been online of him pepper spraying a line of police officers. And so, interestingly, I guess because there is such a such obvious evidence, they've already turned around an indictment.
So what do you mean they have turned around? There's charges made against him.
I mean, and he's been arrested, and as far as I know, is currently being held pending bail.
And that is news because normally people from Patriot Prayer, which is a very ultra right wing conservative group, are not very much arrested.
Yeah, I mean, typically so far it's been a rare thing. So, you know, rare bit of good news, I guess, given everything else that's going on.
Is this going to be a new trend, Brian?
What's that?
Yeah, it's a trend because the leader of the Proud Boys was arrested, I heard.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I think it remains to be seen, really, at this point. But, it seems possible. I mean, I think that certainly if the, sort of like alt-right or, fringe, shall we say, if they become more active in this kind of militant approach, I think that does seem, it seems likely that will become a trend, but remains to be seen, obviously.
Remains to be seen if they become more aggressive towards the police or the police will arrest them.
Yeah, if it continues. No, I think it remains to be seen, what will happen. Or, I think given everything that's occurred, not only in the last few days, but, for the last year or more, it certainly seems likely that we'll see more, you know, kind of white militant activity, sort of anti-government activity. You know, I mean, yesterday, at the same time that we had, you know, the Capitol being stormed, the state house in Kansas, I think, was overrun. And then there was a protest outside the governor's mansion in Washington state, and also outside the Capitol here in Oregon, down in Salem. I mean, those two, those other two didn't really result in much, you know, in terms of they didn't make it into the mansion or into the Capitol. But, you know, that's four incidents in just one day.
Yeah, but it's the day that we have we saw it coming a long time already, and also we already knew that they are not very well organized or what shall we say? And they know they can get away with it, which is completely different if you compare them to hardened Antifa people who know they will be caught if they don't get away.
Right.
So the mentality is, of course, very, very different.
I think we'll see more protests. I mean, I don't know if we'll see in the next 2 weeks, but I do think we'll see some more large protests on the 20th, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the inauguration happens in D.C. Even out here, I think we'll probably see something, you know.
Mm-hmm. We spoke to several people just now about the stuff happening in Washington, D.C., and there's kind of two sides to it. One is it was a victory for these people because they got in and got out, got away, and they had this experience, and they were all broadcasting, making their selfies, showing the world what they were doing inside. On the other hand, it's an outrage. So there's a lot of anger in the general population that this could happen, so that it can also be seen as maybe it's the end of the rise of this thing, because this was
they went too far,
and also you can compare what's happening here with the Black Lives Matter protests and the way police handles that, and it's so completely different. So there's some outrage about that. So that were kind of the two things. One is that it's a victory, and the other, well, it's the end. So what kind would you choose?
Right. Well, I mean, I think there was I actually heard somebody call into a radio program this morning who, you know, said he was actually happy, in a way, happy about what happened yesterday. And you know, at first I was like, wait, is this is like a pro-Trump guy? But no, he said, you know, the fact that they looked like such fools and they weren't really able to accomplish anything. And then just, you know, after that momentary, you know, a few hours of chaos, they've all were sort of summarily thrown out. And then, you know, late into the evening, you know, the Senate and the House confirmed, you know, the election of Joe Biden. And I think that's probably, you know, a fairly appropriate way to look at things. You know, it's interesting. I mean, on the one hand, like, I think it's really complicated, because it's certainly, on the one hand, it shows that if the law enforcement want to be reserved, you know, that they can. Clearly, they can make the decision, even in a high-stress situation, not to, you know, use excessive amounts of force, not to send in militarized, you know, law enforcement response if they want to, right? On the other hand, you know, I think the fact that they didn't do that despite the you know, every reason to respond that way, the fact that only one person was killed, you know, is potentially a good sign for our democracy. Right. And I say that in that I think if it leads to some rethinking and reconsideration and, you know, soul searching, at least within the populace, about, you know, how the police treat left wing or sort of liberal protesters versus the right wing, that would be good. And, that, you know, that would be a sign that, OK, our democracy worked in its way. But if it doesn't, you know, then I would say that's even a worse sign, right? It shows that people of certain class, characteristic, race, political ideology, the laws don't apply to them, right? And I think that that would say probably the people on the left in the United States, by and large, that's the takeaway they have right now, mm-hmm. is that the, you know, the law doesn't apply to certain individuals, right? White people, men, people who are older, people who have more money, you know, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we'll see. You know, it could be a good sign. You know, well, will it be a wake-up call? You know, maybe. I mean, I'm a little bit concerned. I mean, on the one hand, like, I think it's terrible what happened. On the other hand, I think that, you know, instating heavier security all the time is probably not the right answer, right? Like, I think, you know, in a functioning free and democratic society, the halls of government should be open and accessible to the public, you know, within certain constraints, right? Like, it's fine to have metal detectors, perhaps, and certain, you know, and it's fine to maybe shut it down at certain times, and, you know, when the president is there, or when, you know, they do different things, when they have the State of the Union address, and you know, all members of the government are together except a few that they send to some undisclosed location to ensure security of the government. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't just let just anybody go to the Capitol during the State of the Union. You have to get permission, all this kind of stuff. But I fear that what we'll see is... What's that?
No, designated survivors who can survive.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Everybody's familiar with it now because of the show.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that what we'll probably see is, you know, more like what we saw after September 11th.